welcome everyone to iloverealestate.tv. What I thought we'd talk about today is the process of doing joint ventures, I think is a pretty good topic for today, and how students come together and the things that we really should consider when doing a deal with somebody else. There's lots of things to really bring out as part of that discussion. Now, to help me out, I've actually got one of my star students here. He's got an amazing story himself, which we'll get to in a minute. But also, he's been working with a young chap who is another one of my students, and they did a deal together just to kind of test the water, and then they've got on to a little bit of a bigger deal, and we'll talk about that, the whole process of doing joint ventures with other students and the great benefit of the I Love Real Estate community being able to, just hang with like-minded individuals and how you can really find someone that you gel with, that you can make things happen, because investing really can be a lonely life if you let it. And that's really the key. So to help me out, let me introduce the man himself. His name is Mark. Are you there, Mark?
Hi, Timna. How are you?
Very good. Great to have you here and to be talking to all my listeners. Now, what we thought we'd talk about is the actual joint venture process. Now, let's first of all talk about you, because you started with me how long ago? I can't remember now.
Well, it was back in August of 2012 when I first came to Bhutan.
Okay. And what were your thoughts at that time?
I was feeling pretty lost. I'd kind of been through a few different, mentor or coaching groups that really hadn't delivered what I was looking for,
mm-hmm.
and was more about passing on the, the risk and getting someone else engaged to help me find the right deals.
Yep.
But what I ultimately found out was that really they had their own vested interests, and their vested interest wasn't really my interest as their number one.
Yeah, right. And, it's important, I think, also to be dealing with people who don't sell properties to you.
Yes, exactly. Yep, scratch that one off the list.
That's a number one there that it's all right to say I've got this fabulous process and this is what you should be doing and this is what you should be looking for, and I just happen to have one of those.
Yeah. So what I love most is it was just about seeing everything that made sense to me already, the legals, the financials. I understood all that, but I didn't really have the confidence to go and find my own deals.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the light bulb for me at boot camp. It really just made sense. And I could see that here was an education process. It was actually going to help me not have to rely on others to find the deals if that was the path I wanted to go down.
Yeah. Now, you work full-time, so you're pretty busy as well. So your time would be reasonably limited.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Because, getting out there and finding deals and, chatting to people and following things up and all that kind of stuff, it does take time. And when you work full-time as you do, it's a big effort to fit it in around everything else that you do. It's not impossible, but it's certainly a big effort.
Yeah, and respecting family time, I found it really useful when I'm out doing walking. I'm listening to you constantly talking on your podcast, or if I'm on the train, I'm usually doing research on the laptop or listening to more podcasts. So just keep coming, Dibna.
Very good. Well, you're going to be listening to yourself very shortly.
Excellent.
So from boot camp, you actually met up with a young guy who spent his days doing deals, didn't you? Like looking at deals, not so much doing deals, but looking at deals, selling deals, dealing with property, dealing with builders, all of that kind of stuff.
Yes, Steve's a hungry guy. He lives and eats real estate,
yep.
Literally. And I could really see that his drive and my own previous education and desire as well was going to work well together, and he was looking for a partner. I was certainly looking for someone who was ready to go straight away. I had limited capital and he had plenty of time, And we both had very good serviceability, so we had an opportunity to work together on a small splitter block as a first project.
Okay. Now, let's just look at that as well, because I think it's very important when if you're going to be doing a joint venture to really do things with someone you gel with. Now, you know, there's a reasonable age gap between you two.
Thanks, Edna.
Well, I'm saying he's quite young. and you're probably my age.
Oh, I'm very young then.
You might be a little bit younger, but we'll see how we go. Now, so you know, that's that, you know, for somebody outside looking in, you might be a relatively unlikely couple.
It's kind of interesting because Steve is very much the sales guy. He's out there closing deals all the time in terms of housing construction for his employer. Mm. But I'm more of the detail person. So I've been a salesperson, but I'm also detail in the numbers, detail in the process and the due diligence and those things. And they were the areas that Steve didn't have time to focus on. So we matched really well from that perspective.
Yeah. Yeah, because you've got very much the detailed mind of doing the FISOs, doing the numbers, doing all the due diligence and making sure the deals actually work. And he's out there on the coalface talking to people, cutting edge, you know, that sort of stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Okay, so at boot camp, how did you guys actually meet? I mean, did you sit at the same table? Did you talk over a cup of coffee? How did you actually meet at boot camp? Because you didn't know each other before boot camp, did you?
No, we didn't. And we were probably both a little bit cheeky and opportunistic because I stood up at one stage to ask a question, and I remember distinctly your response to my question was, is that a question or are you marketing? And Steve did something similar, and I just judged from his question, I thought, okay, I'm definitely going to talk to that guy. Mm. And so as soon as I crossed the floor at the next break and went up and introduced myself, Steve was surrounded by a dozen people who were all kind of eagerly wanting to talk to him.
Yeah.
And I've just kind of introduced myself, so Steve, I'm ready to do a deal, and I think we align really well. Mm-hmm. So here's my number. Let's talk when you've got time.
Okay.
And within about 10 minutes, he came and sought me out.
Okay. Good. All right. So you met there. You know, you had probably numerous cups of coffee thereafter, decided to test the water with each other with something a little bit smaller. You made a bit of money on that. You know, you saw that you could get on okay and that kind of stuff. It's interesting, as again, from an outsider, you look at you pair and you actually look alike. Have you realised that?
I never realised Steve was so good looking.
You do. You actually look alike. You really do. Because I thought, oh, okay. It's funny how, you know, similar mannerisms and similar, you know, styles and things actually do attract each other.
Yeah, we've got similar personalities too. We're both fairly cheeky and sometimes a little brazen.
it's something that is probably a discussion for another topic on you know, likes attract and all that kind of stuff. But anyway, yeah. back to this. So when you did that first deal, did you do everything that I tell you to do, like do a memorandum of understanding and a joint venture agreement and all of these other good things?
Yeah, it was an interesting process because we were both kind of, running fairly lean on cash at the time. Mm. We both had good serviceability and we both had high confidence. So we just drafted a general agreement between the two of us. It was almost like a gentleman's agreement, but I knew enough about contracts to be able to put something together. It was just a framework.
Yep.
It didn't need to be more than that because there was a lot of trust.
Yeah, and it was a small deal.
Yeah, and that worked reasonably well. We knew that we weren't exposing ourselves financially. 120K for a block and we split it and we kind of made about 13K profit out of it. So it wasn't a big profit, but we knew the process worked.
Yep.
And we knew that the JV worked. We just need to find a subdivision where we could have more lots in it and therefore more margin.
Mm-hmm. So you then do what I tell you not to do and jump to a rather large one. I like you to grow into these things, but anyway, what did you do?
Well, we found a 20-acre block, and I said to Steve, look, go and find something bigger for us, something maybe 5 to 8 lots.
Mm.
And he came back and said, look, I've found 20 lots, or 20 acres, I should say. And I was like, geez, how many lots can we fit on that? And he said, well, it's already got a DA on it that's just lapsed for 85 lots. And I was like, okay, this is sounding very serious. So we needed to bring in a couple more partners, which he brought in two from his network. So therefore we had four people in there and leveraging, I guess, the risk and sharing the risk.
Yep.
And it meant that we were in a position where we could self-fund the purchase of the land and then find ways to, I think, be creative on how we finance the construction for, in particular, stage one and the upfront planning process.
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously that's a bigger deal and it's not what I would recommend you do straight off the cuff. But you guys have both come from, you know, experience in the area and things like that, different fields, but still experience in that type of thing. So what is the expected upside or the expected profit on that deal?
Well, overall, we think there's going to be close to probably around 1.5 mil out of the whole project, maybe 1.5 to 2 mil, depending on how we manage the costs throughout. And I think the way we're looking at the moment is that stage one is 50% sold and probably about 50% constructed.
Yep.
And we're now talking to the bank about how we finance stages two and four combined as the next step. And we think that then that leaves us with running into 2017 to finish off stage three before winter. So that gives us all four stages wrapped up within 3 years, which will be just fantastic.
Yeah. See, that's something else that I want people to understand. When, you know, these are obviously big numbers and people are going to go, oh, wow, I want to do that. But, you know, it is 3 years where you could have gone off and done a number of smaller ones and had the cash flow coming in, less risk, all of that kind of stuff. But this is what you chose to do, yeah?
Yeah, and in particular, the way in which I've funded my way into this project, I've used private equity. So I've gone out to my own network of friends who are either high net worth or had available cash to invest.
Yeah.
And sold them on the concept because I had confidence in the modelling that I'd done on the whole project. And that's where I found it really important to embed yourself into the project and understand the whole fees. That would be really clear on the numbers.
Yep, yep.
And so what it means for me is that I can have this project running with private equity, leaving my own equity to do my own deals.
Okay, yep. So, you know, that obviously makes a lot of sense too, and that's why the longer time frame doesn't affect you quite so much. And, you know, if they're just doing their own thing anyway, they know it's going to be a three-year deal, so, you know, they're prepared for it.
Yeah, and we're looking to get most of our initial contributions out at the end of stage one, and with bank funding for the construction for stages two and four, which we do next, then we're not going to have to put as much in the future.
Okay. So you're now working with there's four of you, so three other partners. What advice would you give to someone who is considering a joint venture?
Oh, look, the first one is have a lot of clarity around, firstly, the type of partner that you're looking for and the contribution that you need from them, both financially, energetically, and even from a values perspective. You know, it would be very difficult to work with someone who didn't have good integrity and very good transparency. When Steve and I first met, one of the first things we did, we just jumped in with total trust and mapped out our balance sheets, all our credit cards and debts, and just laid it all out so we knew exactly where each other was. And if you don't have a partner who actually is willing to sit down and open the kimono and show you all of their dirty linen and where they're at, then you've got a problem. So your trust is really important.
Very good point. Personalities, what would you say about that? Because I don't know these other two that you've brought on board. I obviously know Steve, but what kind of personality mix have you got?
It's kind of interesting because the three of them are all in sales.
Right.
But we were able to be really clear on where the value and the contribution was going to be from each of those players. So, you know, one would have a marketing flair that would be able to pick up that particular aspect and play a lead with some of our key partners.
Yep.
The other two, including Steve, are focused on selling the lots. Mm-hmm. I'm obviously, you know, keen to the finance and the modelling and keeping track of all the paperwork and filing, because those guys don't like admin.
Taking care of GST and all those good things.
All that stuff. So I'm doing all the books.
Yeah, okay. And watching the cost blowouts and things like that. I mean, you're basically taking the position of the accountant in the whole job.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, we've got an accountant that we leverage that I go to for advice, and they do all the main processing that we need done. Mm. But I already know how I want to do it, so most of the time I'm running concepts by the accountant to say, this is how I want to do this, does that make sense?
Yeah.
And usually it's pretty right. So I'm comfortable in that role. So it's just important, whether you've got one or four partners working with you, it's just a case of be really clear about what everyone's expected to be doing. Mm. You know, I mean, every time we send an email to each other, we copy everybody in,
yeah,
so that everybody's got full visibility of all the comms and any issues that are being raised.
I think you've touched on an issue there that is very, very important, and that's communication. Because if you don't have good communication throughout the group, whatever the group is, you know, things start to fall down, and it's a case of he said, she said, and I thought you meant this when you really meant that. And so communication, and in particular communication in writing. So if you have a conversation, you follow it up with, following on from our conversation, this is how I understand things are to be. And you just got it conceptually, the other person can read it, they go yes, or go no, that's not what I meant, you know, and this and whatever. So I really feel that systematic process is very, very important once you start dealing with more than just you.
It's funny that you say that, because I've become known as the guy who likes to write emails.
Good. Somebody has to.
That's right.
No, that's very good. Now, have you got a formal joint venture agreement then with the four of you now?
Yes, we've got the company constitution.
Right.
And a joint venture agreement across the four of us.
Excellent. So, you know, there's a big, and I want people to understand that too, there's a big difference between you know, doing a small little splitter with the two of you and your mates and whatever, to opening it up to four people, four dynamics, four personalities, and a much bigger deal with bigger money, that you know, bigger commitments, all of that kind of stuff. That you know, you've got to have things nailed down properly, and those joint venture agreements are paramount. So you've got this deal running along. Now you're in a situation where you're doing a few deals yourself on the side, or at least you're looking to do deals on the side. What sort of things are you looking for yourself?
Yeah, look, I've got my self-managed super fund also working for me, so I'm about to settle in the next 2 months on a second apartment.
Excellent.
I've decided to jump into the Brisbane market about 12 months ago. I started researching there.
Good.
And I could see that was going to move. It was kind of like, should I be going USA or will I just stick locally? And we decided to stick locally for now.
Yep.
And I'm pretty happy with how that's going. Mm-hmm. I've learned about the self-managed super process over the last probably 3-4 years, because I had previous property in there as well.
Good. And you're structuring a little bit differently now, I would imagine.
Yes, that's right. Mm-hmm. And the other thing that I'm working on is a project. It's my very first small development, where it has a front house with a large backyard, and where we've got a town planning application about to go in the next 2 weeks for three units at the back.
Good, so nice little development, one on your own.
Yeah.
That's good. So they're ticking along, doing your thing. Obviously, you know, it's, what's it been, 3 years roughly?
Yeah, almost 3 years.
And you look back and you think, you know, that's a fair bit to have done in 3 years. And I think this is one of the big advantages of the I Love Real Estate community, is it's that constant connection, it's the constant mateship, it's the constant touching base back in with the education and, you know, inspiration and everything that comes from that, including the podcasts and everything, webinars, etc., to stay motivated and stay on track. One thing that I find very important, particularly for those who succeed not just a little bit but a lot, is that they incorporate into their routine or into their process a mateship regime. Now, let me explain that a little bit. A mateship regime is where, you know, you're working together as part of a team to a common goal, you know, you're touching base, you're brainstorming, you're sharing ideas, all of that kind of stuff. which you have to some degree created in your foursome, where, you know, if you're just plodding along the side, it's much harder to build your energy up and your excitement and everything else if you don't have that person to bounce off who's of equivalent energy level with you, if you like.
Yeah, and what's been really interesting about this particular project in Stratford is that my JV partners are all living a two-hour drive away from where I am.
Yeah.
So, you know, they could be interstate instead of just in regional Victoria.
Mm.
But one of the things that I've got a lot of support from is not just the fact that within the JV I can leverage their experience. I've been part of a group that meets regularly since that boot camp back in 2012.
Yeah.
And it's been so valuable, as you said, having the same energy, the like-mindedness, and the trust that you build up over a couple of years of meeting every month and sharing your stories and your projects. And there are quite a few JVs that have started up within that group themselves.
Yeah.
And that has really helped keep the energy positive, you know, because you realise who your mates are.
Yeah.
And you know the mates that you don't talk property to, because after a couple of times where they just shake their head and say, you're absolutely mad, you think, yep, okay, that's a conversation I don't have with you anymore.
That's exactly right. Because, I mean, it's interesting once you do start hanging with a bunch of like-minded individuals, and I think it's great that, you know, my students, and I encourage it, obviously, to get together on a regular basis and have those goal-setting meetings and just catch-ups and you know, it's the really ongoing support and motivation, as well as obviously I'm there on a webinar every 2 weeks anyway, ongoing, but you know, that face-to-face interaction is so great. But the other thing is that unless you have that, your energy can wane, and you know, you're hanging around other people, and what you notice is the difference between those that are proactive, motivated, out there making it happen. You know, they've done boot camp, they've probably gone on and done quantum and a whole heap of other things as well, and they're learning new stuff and they're being inspired and they're putting it into action. That energy level is addictive. That energy level is, you know, you get carried along with it and you can't help but be part of that success. Whereas outside in the big wide world out there, you know, at work and things like that, you get thrown together with a whole bunch of people who you may or may not like. They may or may not have the energy level that you want to be hanging around with or achieving or anything else. Is that something that you know, that you'd agree with there, or that you find?
Absolutely. I mean, and even within the network, there are a lot of people who are just pure oxygen thieves as well.
Yeah.
And you've really got to ensure that you align yourself with the action takers.
Yep.
And not necessarily risk takers, but at least people who are willing to take the next step.
Mm-hmm.
And so many people aren't willing to take that first step, and all they do is keep asking questions.
Yeah.
But they don't actually do anything.
Yeah.
And so you kind of figure that out as you go. But one of the things you said about, you get caught up in the energy, and it is like a snowball starting to roll down a hill, because you sometimes have to pull the reins in and say, okay, I'm going a bit too hard. I need to slow down a little bit and just breathe and mm-hmm. ensure that I'm going at the right pace. And so whilst I've got these other things going on, I'm still very actively pursuing other JV opportunities where I can leverage, for example, my serviceability, because I'm lacking capital at the moment.
Yep.
I can leverage my serviceability into another project, or even be an introducer to money partners into a JV and get something back from the other side of the JV. So I'm always looking for those kind of opportunities as well.
Yeah. And even, you know, with your experience, to be able to guide and help somebody else through that first step process that, you know, they might be scared to take on their own for the first time. After the first time, they might be up and rolling themselves.
Yeah. And some of the people are just very afraid of spreadsheets and FISOs.
Yeah, so, it's not everybody's,
you know,
cup of tea.
That's right. So I'm very strong in Excel, so I've always made myself available to walk people through how FISOs work just at a simple level, and three or four different styles of FISOs that we've kind of, I guess, come across that we use on occasion, so to give people an idea that you don't have to just use the one tool.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Well, look, Mark, thank you so much for coming on and, you know, sharing your thoughts and guidance there. Is there anything you'd like to say to anybody out there who's thinking of further education or maybe joint ventures or anything else?
Just don't be afraid. And don't be afraid to ask questions, but certainly don't be afraid to take that first, second and third steps. And there's such a great network to support you in making the right decisions and trying to ensure that the appropriate risks are mitigated as you go. Hmm. And so, look, I appreciate the opportunity to share what I've experienced, Dibna, and from my heart I just want to thank you for everything that you've provided me, because I'm just facing into a whole new world that I'm just so excited about.
Well, I'm excited for you as well, Mark, and can't wait to hear the next chapter of the Mark Schneider episode.
Terrific, Dibna. Thank you.
Okay, guys. Well, thank you for listening. Thanks, guys, for being on the line, and we'll be back again to talk to you very, very soon on another exciting topic. Thanks, Mark.
Thanks, Dibna.
Bye-bye now.